watching Regis a couple of mornings ago, and James Spader was on with Regis, and they go to show a clip from Boston Legal, and darned if I don't recognize somebody standing behind Mr. Spader. It's you, Austin.
Yes, I am always the guy in the tie standing behind James Spader.
Now, I got to ask you, William Shatner, the greatest scene-chewing actor in the history of the world, is on Boston Legal. What is that like, being around this guy?
That guy is just a total pro. I mean, talk about the comeback story of the ages, the showbiz comeback. I mean, he has reinvented himself so many times, from a serious actor to Captain Kirk to then a punchline to now he's in on the joke, and now he's solid. He knows his lines. I exchanged hello and how are you with him. That was the extent to which, you know, I had any involvement with him. But I wanted to say, you know, oh my God, Star Trek was such a big thing, you know, for my growing up, et cetera, et cetera. But I knew that if I did, you know, the Shat would have hit this fan, you know. It would not have been pretty. Hi, I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 66, Kirk or Picard? It will not surprise regular listeners to the RSC podcast to discover that there's an enormous cross-section of RSC fans who are also Star Trek geeks. Sadly, however, there are very few current RSC actors who are also Trekkies, so it was left to me and Michael Faulkner to discuss this age-old philosophical question. We flipped open our communicators and started by acknowledging the enormity of the task ahead of us.
It speaks to so many issues. I mean, we could easily, it seems to me, we could easily have a podcast about Genie or Bewitched.
Yes. Yes.
Ginger or Marianne.
Exactly.
Batman or Superman.
Chrissy or Janet,
to come up more recently in the pop culture references. Hannah Montana or Zoe 101.
Right. Right.
Excuse me. Both of whom are underage, so I think we can stop talking about them now.
But only one of whom is pregnant, right?
Good point. Yes, I think only one of whom is pregnant. Okay. So I guess we got to like the pregnant one, right? No. But I think it might also be generational. This question was first asked by I believe Heather Michelle. She's the head of the Online League of Podcast Transcribers. I think she calls herself the mistress. And you know what? I think she may have gotten a life because some of the podcast. I think we're a little behind on the podcast transcription.
It's so touching when they grow up.
It is. We miss our RSC fans when they grow up and move on to other things. I asked Reed Martin whether he wanted to be part of this conversation, and he just glared at me. You know the way he glares?
Yes, especially when anything Star Trek is mentioned.
Yeah, and you know, with that thought balloon over his head that said, "Do you think I would have any interest in this topic at all?"
Well, he should, because he is bald, and Jean-Luc was bald.
Well, and I think that takes us right into the heart of the people who prefer Jean-Luc over Captain Kirk. Jean-Luc is boldly bald in a way that Captain Kirk was ashamed of his baldness.
Yes, Jean-Luc is boldly balds where no man has balded before.
Exactly right. Well said. And to many people, bald is sexy. In fact, I think if we got Jane Martin on here, she would confirm that.
Yes, so Reed's missing out.
He is missing out. But not knowing anything about, well, not, he probably knows more than he lets on, but not caring at all about the topic, he said, "Well, surely it's Kirk, isn't it?" And I went, "Really? Why do you say that?" He said, "Well, he's seen Patrick Stewart in a couple of old acting Shakespeare DVDs where I think Patrick Stewart was young and sort of in love with his own voice. Perhaps than more than he has become.
I've seen those, and I think one of those is Patrick Stewart's Shylock versus another fellow's Shylock. And the other fellow actually happened to be of the Jewish persuasion, so his Shylock was much more convincing, and Patrick Stewart didn't come off that well.
Yeah, no, I see that. Well, and I think it might also be a generational thing. You know, Reed and I grew up with the original Star Trek. And you know, for all of William Shatner's, for all of his behavioral tics, you know, his Captain Kirk swept through the galaxy unfettered by taste or restraint.
Yes. For me, breaks down to two things. The inner adolescent in me, I mean, and perhaps this is generational too, to a degree, the inner adolescent in me prefers Captain Kirk because mm-hmm. he is the swashbuckling hero who waltzes into any situation, has absolutely no regard for the prime directive, and will mm-hmm. interfere with any race, any culture, just to, you know, get his own way and bed the girl. But the adult in me, the mature person in me, prefers Captain Picard's kind of non-violent approach to, you know, multicultural communication.
That's right. First contact rules of engagement.
Yes.
You know, you're right. Picard is the more grown-up Kirk because, well, and I think that the world of science fiction and the world of television was more grown-up when Jean-Luc Picard came along.
Definitely.
Than when Kirk came along. Because you're right, Kirk buckled his swash and his girdle wherever he went through the stars. But remember that Star Trek's original, Gene Roddenberry's original pitch to the networks was that this show would be wagon train to the stars.
Yeah, so it's a Western.
So it's a Western, and he's the lead sheriff or the lead stagecoach driver who's going to get us safely through Indian territory.
This galaxy ain't big enough for the two of us.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, it is. You're right. It is when we, you and I, guys our age, first discovered Star Trek, you know, we were 7 years old. And so Kirk was the bomb. But then as we grew older, you know, Picard was more mature.
There are some fans now that grew up with Next Generation, and when they see Kirk, all they can think is, that's so cheesy.
Yeah, well, and they're not wrong.
What I loved then for its action, I love now for its cheesiness. I still enjoy the original episodes, and I enjoy them in an entirely different way. But when I watched them as a kid, watched them with... there was one episode, I think it was the one where the kind of smoke creature invades Scotty.
Yes.
That one kept me up at night. It scared the bejesus out of me.
No. Well, many of them were. I remember the original episode, The Menagerie, which repurposed the pilot, the cage,
yes,
into the two-parter.
Great episode. I
mean, when the woman at the end changes back and they show her for what she really looks like, all hunched over and torn up in the wreckage, that I screamed and ran so far back to the opposite end of the room, and I had nightmares about that moment. Because I think now I'm dating myself, as so often happens when I'm on the road away from my wife, I date myself. I think I saw that when it was originally aired. So I might have been 6, or maybe I saw the repeat, so I was 8, you know?
Yeah.
So that was very, very chilling.
Well, I was born in 69, so I caught everything in reruns anyway, and it was on every night.
Yeah.
Only interrupted by Warrior Games and... Or Giants games.
On Channel 2 in Oakland.
Channel 2 in Oakland. It was on for an hour every night, and it proceeded
at dinner time. At dinner time.
At dinner time. And it was always on. And I had seen, I think in 1 year, I had seen every episode, and I still watched them over and over and over and over.
That totally just reminds me of a memory where, you know, my brother and I would be watching the 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock repeat of whatever Star Trek was on. My dad would come home from work at around 6:20. We'd be watching it, and, you know, Captain Kirk would call for Warp Factor 7, and my dad would look at the TV screen and go, oh, that was always my favorite warp. And he'd walk out of the room.
Hey, it's Eliza Coyle from Spike TV's The Factory, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Hi, this is Andrew Price. I wrote 5 stories for Star Trek Voyager, and I'd have to say the best captain outside of Janeway is probably Picard. He was the better actor. And, you know, if he was on Boston Legal, I'd be able to fairly assess them both, but for now, I'll have to say Picard.
Where can you see the RSC? This week, we're performing completely Hollywood abridged in Holland, in cities whose names I will mispronounce: Zwolle, Zuidermeer, Arnhem, and Kerkrade on March 4th, 5th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. And in just a week, we're going to open The Complete History of America abridged and The Bible, The Complete Word of God abridged in Washington, D.C. at the Landsberg Theater. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for more information.
Dee and I watched Star Trek Next Generation, and then I watched Deep Space Nine a little bit. Neither one of us watched Voyager.
Yeah.
We tried to watch Enterprise. And but I tell you, the biggest thing we liked most about Enterprise was its opening theme song.
Yeah. Well, I hated the opening theme song.
Well, so now see, but here's why I've had more people say, "Oh, that opening theme song is so cheesy." But my argument is, it's Star Trek. You must embrace the cheese.
That's true. But the thing is, I thought Next Generation went beyond the cheese.
Yes. Well, for a while it did,
it didn't start out beyond the cheese. But it,
no.
Around season 3,
yeah,
and 4 and 5, it became, you know, those were some of the best time travel episodes written by a fellow UC Santa Cruz alumni, Brandon Braga.
Very good.
That I've ever seen, you know. I mean,
they were. Yesterday's Enterprise is fantastic. Is one of the best episodes. And Yesterday's Enterprise is just a great hour of television,
yep,
whether you like Star Trek or not. It has more resonance if you do like Star Trek. But yep, that episode and The Inner Light and The Best of Both Worlds,
yeah,
where Kirk is transformed Picard is kidnapped by the Borg.
Yes.
Those are the episodes where you have to, where you say to the Kirk fans, look at that.
Yeah.
Shatner couldn't have done this in a million years.
Yeah, exactly. But my favorite character has always been Spock.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I liked him much more than the captains, and I have to say, I think that he is the reason I am an actor today.
Leonard Nimoy
Spock, specifically Spock, because I was a half breed growing up. I was half English and half American, and I never felt like I fit in with any of my friends at elementary school. And this is around the same time I started watching Star Trek, and I identified with the character being, you know, half and half, half human, half Vulcan, not fitting in with his teammates or his peers. And
right,
I identified with him. And then as I got a little bit more intelligence, I realized, oh, he was an actor playing a part, not just a character. I identified with the actor, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. I could take this discomfort. I mean, I'm obviously now I'm an adult. I'm assigning more meaning to it than I was able to conceive.
But you still have trouble fitting in.
Yeah, I still have trouble fitting in. Definitely. I mean, I can't talk to Reed Martin or Matt Croak about baseball to this day.
Well, listen, join the club. No, I can't either. Unless the teams are comprised of the Klingons playing Vulcans, I got no horse in that race.
Exactly.
You know? I think that's one of the great things about science fiction generally, and I know a bunch of people like guys in the RSC don't have any patience for science fiction because
sure,
it feels too pretend or whatever. But the best science fiction isn't about the freaky world that it's set in. It's about today. It's about what is going on right now. And
it's like Shakespeare. Star Trek is like Shakespeare.
Well, and interestingly, the latest round of Star Treks, and maybe the ones in the 60s as well, they cast all actors with lengthy classical theater credit.
Well, yeah. Well, Shatner was a lead up at Stratford, Ontario.
That's right. Well, and it's funny, if you've ever seen Richard Burton in Beckett, the movie Beckett.
No.
If you watch that movie, he is using the exact same acting shtick as William Shatner does.
Well, I've seen him in Equus, and I think that there's a bit of that in there too.
I think they have the exact same acting tricks. I think Burton may have a little bit more more underneath. You know what I mean?
I figured out the Shatner method when I was in acting school, when I was in college, and I was getting my theater degree. I figured out the Shatner method, which is if you have a line like, "I don't know what's going on." I remember one of my Shakespeare voice teachers telling me that in Shakespeare, as a rule, there are two ideas per line. And what Shatner did is take that literally. And even when it's not true, he breaks up the line to make it separate ideas. So if the line is, "I don't know what's going on," he makes it, "I don't know what's going on."
So he makes it into two questions, two sentences.
Yeah, he makes two ideas for each sentence or for each line, and that's
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
well, like in the book show, you know, Reed tolerated yours and Reed and Matt Croak tolerated yours and my fondness for Star Trek when we slammed Captain Kirk into the Odysseus story of the Odyssey and the Iliad.
Yes.
And partly because it is justified because the Odyssey is the original quest.
Yes.
You know, and literally they meet up with these aliens who give this Ulysses and his sailors meet up with aliens who give them a drug that makes them act all silly, which is the plot of about 18 different Star Trek episodes.
Exactly.
So then you and I playing Ulysses are taken over by these drugs, and we have to start acting Shatner-esque.
Yes.
And you and I discovered that your imitation of William Shatner is better than mine. I cede that to you.
Yes, but your performance in the book show is more Shatnerian throughout.
Yeah, that's true. I think my acting across the board is more authentically Shatnerian. So I think in that way, my pendulum comes down on the Picard side, because I think Picard has become a better actor over the years, and he's something that I aspire to. The simplicity and the depth of what he can do at his best is something that which is to take nothing away from Shatner, because I know he's a very talented man who has reinvented himself many times over the decades.
Yes.
And in fact, as much as I love Picard and Patrick Stewart, the first movie they did together, was it Generations?
Yeah.
The movie where Shatner and Stewart, Kirk and Picard were together in the same movie, Shatner wiped the floor with Patrick Stewart. I thought he just showed him how to act in a Star Trek movie. But even those guys needed to be reinvented, and they're going to be reinvented sometime this year by J.J. Abrams for the next movie.
And I can't wait. I can't wait.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us an email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or leave us a message on our MySpace page at myspace.com/reducedshakespeare. You can also find us at facebook.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, ripsite.co.uk, yeoman Matthew Croak, music by GarageBand. The theme to Star Tricks was written by the fascinating John Weber. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Briar Rose. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Eliza Coyle. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Austin Tichner. 94,280 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Dennehy. I played Lieutenant Commander Shelby on the Best of Both Worlds episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. And if I had to choose between Kirk or Picard, I would choose Data. Oh, I thought he was adorable. I love Data. I love the brains and the brawn combination. Always does me in. That's who I would choose. Is that a diplomatic enough answer?